Okay, is this working? Yeah, so, you know, that was a great question. I don't know if he's just left the room, but we're going to carry on that same kind of a conversation where we're going to talk about some innovation. And actually, I have some slides there. Do I need a clicker? Or you'll just click them for me. So we actually have here a new technology, and there's a piece of, there's a little brochure about it on floating around on a lot of chairs here, which is we're calling the UPC code for media. So it's essentially a way to do for media workflows, and including everything that we've seen all day long, from production all the way to data and analytics and reporting, to introduce standardized identifiers so that we can streamline everything that we do, in the whole ecosystem. So this, again, it's a creative industry. So to try to bring this kind of a standardization into a creative industry, we'll talk about a lot of these challenges. But I'm going to give a couple of very basic intro slides, just what this is, to set the stage, and then we'll have our panelists talk about it. But actually, before I do that, just each of you say your names and where you're from, just your name, your title, your organization. Start, Will.
Will Kreth, the Executive Director of the Entertainment ID Registry.
I'm Steve Davis. I'm Global Product Director for Kantar Media.
Brian Hughes from Magna at Agency Guy.
Yeah, the agency guy. He's going to give us the real story, what goes on in an agency. Okay, so, and I apologize for all the acronyms. So OBID means open binding of IDs, and we're going to try to stop using that. But as I apologize, here's another one, which is TAXI Complete. So SIM is basically it's a coalition of all the video-based, TV-based media companies, all moving cross-platform, and the media buying agencies, dealing with cross-platform measurement and trying to bring more granular measurement to television. And so as we started looking at the challenges, when SIM formed about 8 years ago, we're like, oh my God, you don't even have the same way of calling the same name for a piece of content and an ad throughout all these different platforms as everything is moving across platforms. So along with other things that we do, we decided, could we just try to figure out a way to create essentially what we call a UPC code for media? So we called it TAXI, Trackable Asset Cross-Platform Identification. And it involves, we have Will Kreth here from EIDR. So Entertainment ID Registry is a standardized metadata for, identification schema for identifying content. And Brian here is actually going to represent Ad ID as well as the agency point of view here, because Harold was just on the last panel. But Ad ID is a standardized way to display the identification of ads and create everything you need to know to identify an ad. And so along with those, though, in order to transmit this through the whole ecosystem, what we have been spending a lot of time on in the last 5, 6, 7 years is working with Society of Motion Picture and Television Engineers to create an open standard audio watermark where you can it's actually a pair of watermarks. And so on one part of the watermark, you embed these EIDR and Ad ID codes. So essentially, it's smart content. Anywhere you have a detector in the whole ecosystem, you can immediately read what that ad is, what that piece of content is. So once you've embedded it up front, you can then read it anywhere throughout the whole ecosystem where you have a decoder, a detector. And then essentially, there was one last thing here. The other part of the watermark is that you obviously, in advertising in particular, and also for content, you need to give credit, viewing credit, to the distributor or the network who broadcast that ad or that piece of content. So there's also the ability to put in a distributor ID and a timestamp. So this does not interfere with any other watermarks that are out there. It's open. Kantar Media was the company that was selected after extensive testing with SMPTE. And so that's what we're going to talk about. So this just gives you, these are the SIM members. These are the groups that have been working together for quite a while here to try to get this to market. Oh, I'm not going to go through that last one, but here, these are just a couple of use cases, and Steve will talk a little bit more, as will both Brian and Will. Hey, my timer is on 00, so that assumes I have completely as much time as I want. So, you know, we started with this whole idea of, can we use these standardized identifiers to better track assets and do audience measurement across platforms? But as soon as we got into this, we started realizing, oh my God, you know, if you actually had like a UPC code for media, you could do all kinds of other things in terms of increased speed, transparency, accountability. You could have second screen syncing to bring alternate content, you know, on a portable device while something's playing on linear, either a content related to a content or related to ads. You could trigger surveys, quizzes, coupons. This thing keeps going too far. Okay, and then all of the benefits related to workflow efficiency, you know, dynamic ad insertion, cross-platform, accelerated digital content locker adoption, you know, improved automated content recognition, you know, simplifying media media reconciliation, asset storage, on-the-fly media assembly, you can read them all. But we started, and we had a workshop yesterday with a whole bunch of people throughout the whole, you know, kind of ecosystem, including technology and research vendors, and they even came up with some new ideas that we can talk about later. But let me move on to, I'm not going to show that, that's very complicated, so let me go back. Can we just do our panel slide, and we'll go on to our discussion? So what I wanted to do was to have, why don't we start with Brian, go ahead, and say a little bit, talk about kind of what life is like in an agency and kind of the challenges that you have that this particular solution, you know, could help you to deal with. So,
well, one of our biggest frustrations continues to be kind of a lack of a consistent way to do cross-platform measurement. And in order to do that sort of consistently, you have to, there's certain repetitive tasks that are involved, like identifying, for example, what an ad is and where it ran and where it showed up. Personally, I don't see that there is any sort of magic or special sauce to just saying what something is and identifying what something is. It's something that everybody that measures media has to do in some way, shape, or form. So for me, this just seems like a way to standardize that and make everybody have the same way of doing it and eliminate sort of the repetitive tasks in each sort of individual place of having to do this over and over again in a different way, and everybody can be doing it the same way. It just seems like, it just makes sense for me. I'm big into efficiency, so.
And as there are fewer people to do all of this, you know, it makes sense to have some kind of efficiency here. And Will, do you want to talk about it a little bit more from a content point of view? I always love to give the example of, it brings it home when you talk about a show, 2.5 Men. How many different ways are there to write and describe, and how many, everybody in this room would probably write a different way of how do you say 2.5 Men. So talk a little bit about the benefits of content standardization and how you're seeing this.
Yeah, I would take maybe perhaps as far as series go, I would take perhaps an example of like The Odd Couple, right? It's a television series that existed back in the 60s or 70s. It was also a theatrical, a major motion picture, and it was also a reboot of a television series, all of them titled The Odd Couple. And so when it comes to identifying which odd couple are we talking about, right? That could go for the Star Trek franchise as well, too. You need to know a few things about them, and it would be great if it was in a machine-readable format as opposed to someone hand-keying in or visually just going in and having to dedupe or identify exactly what you're talking about. EITR provides a alphanumeric code that, like an ISBN number or UPC code, allows you to specifically identify exactly what piece of content you're talking about, whether it's the 8K or 4K version of a French language edit of a major motion picture, or whether it's season 3, episode 2 of your favorite television series. So to have that kind of built in. What is something I'd like to think of as just the same efficiency as if you made a phone call between here and Australia. You don't have to think about the software or all the switches and the things it goes through to go over to get to Australia. You just need a phone number. It's like dial tone. It's super simple. It's a way to from conversation from one individual to another, you say, I'm talking about this piece of content, and it's got a number, and let's go to town by having the way to talk about it with the same common reference point.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a simple idea, you know, but you can't believe that we really don't have it in our industry. Like, everybody calls everything that's a different name. So the other thing that we needed then, obviously, was this method to bind this identifier into the asset. So that you could, it persists, and you can, you know, find it, detect it anywhere throughout the ecosystem. So, Steve, maybe talk a little bit more about the watermark and how that's going to work.
Sure. So, within the Kantar Media family, and again, I'm not sure if everybody is aware of kind of the assets that Kantar Media have in the U.S. We're pretty well known as the providers of competitive advertising intelligence to marketers, agencies, and publishers, where we track all the ads that are running across all media platforms and try to harmonize it together to let folks know what their kind of share of voice is in a competitive environment. What you might not know, outside of the U.S., we're also a television audience provider of ratings data. And the watermark technology that we are now bringing to this initiative has been successfully implemented in a number of countries, mostly in EMEA and India. But, you know, this is foundational stuff. I think we've all said this enough times. It shouldn't take as much work as it does. Unfortunately, we're in a transition stage, and it requires this type of foundational effort. But at the end of the day, what this technology does is allows for kind of a single telling of the truth, right? So when we are able to connect with, in this case, our partners of EIDR or with AdID, wherever that content runs, whether it's the Star Trek episode that runs over the air, or it runs through a VOD platform, or it runs through OTT services, we want to just be able to make sure that the content owner can track it appropriately, wherever that ad runs, and against the content that it's inserted against. Same thing applies. We just want to make sure that there's one single version of the truth, and it's easily recorded, it's easily aggregated and brought back into whatever use case is needed. So this technology has been deployed for a number of years in lots of our different markets where we have an audience measurement business. And at the end of the day, really, it's about making things simpler, but maybe, and maybe to the point of we need better storytellers around here on these initiatives, it also just makes for better advertising content when you can be more interactive with your ad creative, and it enables more effective editorial content or production content when you can be more interactive with your product. So a couple of use cases we've talked about, and we've been kind of trying to tell the story now in the U.S. for a few months since the standard was adopted. You know, an example from a content perspective, we have a client in Europe who produces the equivalent of Dances with the Stars. Right, Dancing with the Stars. It's called Dance, Dance, Dance. And yesterday at our workshop we shared one of the examples. They had an advertiser who wanted to do some virtual reality programming. So they helped distribute kind of a cardboard cutout of a VR device where the consumers could put the VR headset on them, and then as they're watching the episode, can actually dance along with the stars in step and have fun, you know, dancing with the folks who are performing live. So it speaks to the synchronicity of this technology, that during a live broadcast you can actually put your headset on and foxtrot or what have you. But it just makes for better content, a better user experience. It had lots of great success. And we've got similar examples on the advertising side, where when the ad is initially encoded with the embedded and has the right coding, you can all of a sudden have lots of new interactivity deployment with the folks who are engaged with your brand. And there are a couple of different examples, and maybe we'll come back to that later, but I don't want to steal all the time. But the same kind of value prop exists.
Yeah, there's very cool things where you can give sort of different information that you couldn't be giving in a television, a 15-second, 6-second, 30-second ad. You can give a very different experience on the second screen. So it opens up lots of creative opportunities. But anyway, we had this workshop yesterday where we were talking, to a lot of folks about implementation and how to get this all going in the industry. And the point that the gentleman in the back, asked the question before is very relevant because, the challenge here is that you have to get content creators to register their content with EITR and to then insert it into a watermark, as soon as you've made the piece of content. And the same on the ad side. So the advertisers need to, as soon as they've created an ad, register it with ad ID and then embed it into the watermark. That's like the basics, that if you embed this all once, then you can forever, for the lifetime of that piece of content, you'll be able to detect this. So can you guys just talk a little bit about kind of how we think we might get there? Like, what are the, change is hard to come by, and so sometimes, like at the media agency, it's the creative agency that's creating the ad, but you guys are benefiting a little bit more down at the media agency. So, how can we do this?
I mean, the good news, as far as I've been able to tell, a good deal of our clients are already using ad ID. So I think probably on the ad side of the equation anyway, we're a little bit farther along than we would be on the content side. So that's the good news. I mean, in terms of how we kind of sell it through, it's kind of what I described. It's like, this is a way we can tell where your ad goes, regardless of where it goes. And what I forgot to say earlier, the analogy I used for sort of how can we get rid of the repetitive tasks that there's no real special sauce behind. And the example I always use is viewability, right? So viewability was a huge thing for digital measurement for a while, and Integral Ad Science went ahead and made their viewability code open source because determining whether or not something is viewable, there's no magic to it. It's what you do with the analysis on the back end that is the sort of special sauce and where the rubber meets the road. So I think any opportunity to take tasks like that everyone has to do and has to do in more or less the same way, we can automate that in whatever way possible. It makes a lot of sense.
How about from a content point of view, Will? How do you think we can accelerate the adoption of EITR and the insertion of EITR like into the watermark? Getting all this up front, early on in the production.
Well, the truth is today, when it comes to television, is kind of a little behind the film industry. EITR was kind of born out of the film industry, was a project out of Movie Labs, where now today 85-95% of all movies that are in theatrical distribution have an EITR ID. So in the supply chain, one of the key things and initiatives for us is our focus is on trying to drive further adoption, like you said, earlier, and also so that all the vendors in the industry adopted and create a way to support an EITR ID in their tool sets and in all their different metadata interfaces so that it can move all the way through out to broadcast and to play out. So when it comes to the linear broadcast television industry, there are companies like Telestream, Harmonic. We have conversations with the vendor community about ways to inject this new watermark, but it's important. I think the point you were trying to make is that they have EITR IDs already registered for the content as early as possible. One good example we have is that and we're talking with NBCU around the table yesterday about their global title management system, so that for future series, NBC says, okay, I got a 2019 series, I'm going to register with a house ID. I'm also going to register that series with EITR ID through an API connection. We have training, we have APIs, we have an SDK, we have all the tools that we will in Java and C++ and PHP. We can support multiple ways for people to use an API connection to the EITR registry to do their registrations. Or they can work with the vendor, with their third parties also, they can register titles as well.
Yeah, and oh, go ahead.
If I could just, I totally agree. I think we have to make sure that we're as upstream as we can be, and again, we're in early days and trying to make sure that there's education around the ecosystem. But as importantly, you know, nobody wants to fund two types of, you know, a legacy system and a new system. So as best as we can, we're all, I think, around this table trying to make this as low cost a solution as possible. So, you know, wherever it's possible, we don't want to have any one piece of the ecosystem take on the burden of funding this. You know, with Kantar Media's perspective on this, we're playing a license game. There's not a subscription game here with regards to embedding. We want to make it easy to embed the content, and we want suppliers, because this is an open standard, we want suppliers to build the applications, to build the new toolkits, to build what the future might look like utilizing this technology, and that's where the kind of the payoff will come. So this is a long game from our perspective, and I think in many cases our partners with EIDR and AdID are also doing some similar things to kind of lower the cost of entry.
Yeah, that's important. And also there's been a little bit of a barrier of a lot of media companies have their house ID system, or they're wedded to the Nielsen Gracenote sort of Tribune proprietary ID system. On the ad side, there was the old ISKI. It's kind of going away finally. But what people don't tend to always realize is that, you know, proprietary actually isn't helping in this new cross-platform world where you really need to have, we've heard today all day long, interoperability. And so, it's just this notion of proprietary being superior, I think, is also something, you know, we have to deal with.
I think of this notion of if one company owned all the phone numbers and you couldn't buy phone numbers from any other company, what would that be like? We're looking at a world where the support for common reference IDs, whether it be on the advertising side or on the content side, is an inevitability. And so at NAB this year, we announced an effort called EIDR Ready, where it was a message to the vendor community, hey, if you support ID or you want to support EIDR IDs in your tool sets, let's work together to communicate that back to your clients, to the networks, to the companies that you work with on a regular basis.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously in terms of measurement, which is, you know, the application I'm most interested in, obviously Nielsen's the 800-pound gorilla in that space, and I completely understand their reticence, having sunk a lot of money into developing their own watermarks and stuff like that. But I think, you know, ideally we would be able to convince them that it is a long game, and that, you know, you can take those resources and invest them in your analytics and research. That's really where you make your money anyway, and you know, take this sort of piece out of the equation.
It's a namespace that should be kind of just ubiquitous and universal.
Yeah. And the thing that's great about EIDR, too, is that there's unlimited what they call alternate ID spaces. So EIDR is kind of like a Rosetta Stone that can link all these proprietary ID systems. So you don't have to give up your proprietary approach, you can use EIDR as a link.
One example is the movie Gladiator has like about 28 different alternate IDs in the EIDR namespace. So that it could be IMDb, it could be the Rotten Tomatoes ID, it could be the studio, of course, on and on, international IDs across the globe, which is great because it provides a way to you come in with one ID, you then can match it against an EIDR ID and check out as a member with an EIDR ID back to your own internal database.
I should have an opportunity for questions if you guys want to ask anything. We're getting down to about 5 minutes here, so if anyone has any questions, just let us know.
Yeah, just raise your hand.
Yeah.
People just want drinks, I think.
Well, there's still a keynote before drinks start.
It's a draw. You know, it's a lure.
I was just interested in looking at how these IDs are applied and how they're being used these days. Is there any interest in moving any of this to the blockchain?
I mean, I think we got to crawl before we walk, I think is the answer to that one. Yeah. I mean, blockchain is one of those things where it's very hard to tell on any given day whether or not it's a bunch of crap or not. So I think, you know, we're still kind of figuring that out and what the right applications are in our industry. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, essentially, having an ID that can then be used to track secure transactions in a ledger conceptually does make sense, but I haven't actually seen, you know, it in action yet. So, you know, I think with blockchain, we're all like, wow, that looks really cool, but I'm very curious to follow the IBM, the collaboration that they're doing, because potentially you know, they'll actually show how it can apply in advertising. I think Harold has a question.
Well,
but did you
actually want wanted, I actually question. Wanted to comment on this last question. Blockchain is all about data governance. And so when you start thinking about unique identifiers and standardized practices and smart contracts and all that stuff, when you're not, if you're not using good standard methods and practices, then all of a sudden, you know, you have a garbage in, garbage out situation. So we spent, I spent a lot of time talking after the blockchain keynote with the speaker, and he said, you know, at the end of the day, all of the work that's being done, whether it's in open standard watermarking and unique identification and all that stuff, all of that leads to good blockchain implementation as it goes forward. You know, and blockchain gets built in layers. In the same way, supply chains get built in layers. And when we start talking about the measurement layer, the interactivity layer, all of that stuff builds on each other. And I think we're talking about an improved supply chain and improving the supply chain. And that's been a message we've heard all day today, is that in media and entertainment, we don't do a good job of managing a supply chain. And that's the key piece.
Yeah, the white paper that Jane referred to, if you guys haven't seen it yet, it's on a lot of the seats here. It's the UPC code for our media industry. I mean, again, you don't get much more foundational, I think, than that example.
And that white paper will be distributed when we email everybody and let you know presentations are available. That white paper is going to be available as a PDF in case you didn't get one. Here.
Thanks. This is a question for Steve. You talked about how this has been implemented in other markets. Do you have examples of that, of how it's played out? And I think you said it was in Asia or so, where the combination of Taxi Complete? Or?
Yeah, so what's been implemented is the watermark and the technology and the applications that media owners and agencies and marketers now use to make it more, again, more interactive, to allow for better tracking of the audiences across devices. What we don't have in those markets, like we have here, are these two foundational data sets that are EIDR and Ad ID. So this is more us bringing our technology and connecting it with these data sets.
So
just want to make sure that was clear. It's more about the watermark technology has been utilized by our clients.
We've had watermark technology in the U.S. for a while from Nielsen, but all that they carried was the timestamp and a distributor ID. And then it used to take them 15 days, now it takes 8 days for them to actually map it back to the program logs, you know, at the stations to determine what was actually on that channel at that time, and then to calculate from that which minutes were program minutes versus commercial minutes. I mean, the calculation of the ratings, we actually did a project at CIM where we process mapped that entire process, and it is ridiculous and legacy. I'm sorry to say, but even someone from Nielsen will tell you that. It could be in real time.
Yeah,
and they've even looked at using Ad ID and EIDR in their watermark, which they could do to make it more real time. But they have the legacy process of doing that. It's unbelievable for, you know, it being in a digital era that we're in. So.
By the way, whenever I bring this up at Nielsen meetings, I get the dirtiest looks.
Well, just I think there's SMPTE put this RFP out and we responded because we thought we had the right tech, but we also had to have a business. We had to make a business decision, and part of that is that this would be an open standard. So again, I kind of explained the business rationale for that. But I'm not suggesting that Nielsen doesn't have the technology. I'm suggesting the open standard is something that they would have to come to terms with.
Any other questions? Well, I think
final
we're
thoughts? Yeah, I mean, we're right at the end of the buzzer.
We're right at the end here.
So
before we get the buzzer,
final
recap. I mean, the only thing, if you guys want to have sort of a final parting word, our message to the industry is basically, you know, sign up with AdID, sign up with EIDR, get involved, do your embedding, and then there is so much so much opportunity. If you think back to the retail industry, you know, it took, I think it took some of the big retailers to say, we will not take product if it does not have a UPC code for it finally to get through, and it may take that. It may take some of the networks saying, we're not going to take an ad, which most of them will not say ever. If it doesn't have an ad ID, or you know, your piece of content you're submitting has to have an EIDR. So, any last thoughts about how we can move ahead here, or we're good?
Yeah, I think that you exactly hit it. That was like the Walmart example people give about supply chain, and where, you know, having a barcode for your content is, or for, sorry, for your CPG was essential. And so I think the industry will move in that direction. I can't put a pinpointed date on when that'll happen. I think eventually, though, the inevitability of open standards, again and again, we've seen past as prelude, history as example, they do eventually win. It just takes time.
Okay.
All right.
Works for me. Thanks.
Let's do it.
All right. Well, look, thank you, Brian. Thank you, Will. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Jane. Big round of applause.
And we didn't get a beer.
What an awesome day.